This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on July 13th, 2017. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next matter is proposed interim enforcement discussion of Commission's response to alleged foreign interference with American elections. And this is a matter that's continued from a previous matter. It's something that Commissioner Weintraub has, these various issues, has raised frequently and sometimes with a loud voice, and has gained a lot of attention. And I think this should provide for an interesting conversation. But I do want to say this, that a number of the things that are subject to some of the things that I've read, and given the situation that exists in this country right now with respect to a number of these issues, and given the fact that we're asked to have matters before us that deal with some or all of them, I'm hoping that we can keep our conversation sufficiently distant from any contention that we've got any particular either predilection toward one position or another, or versus guilt or innocence, or is it right or wrong, but mostly just to go forward on discussions of some of these issues as best we can. The my thought would be there's six items in discussing it with Commission Weintraub, and what I'd like to do is take each one separately and have a separate discussion on that within a reasonable period of time, not trying to reach agreement necessarily, but to see where we might find some common ground or some basis for movement and that kind of thing. I want to commend her for the time she's put in all this. It's always good to get rousted off our soft pedestal once in a while, and this is certainly helping to do that. There was a couple things that I thought I'd like to ask first to address, and that so let me just go ahead. Of the six, the one is provide public assurances on FEC data integrity, and I say that because we've, since that last meeting, amongst ourselves, have learned a lot about where we are and where we've come from and where we want to go and that kind of thing. So I just invite the Commissioner Weintraub to address what she sees at this point after some of the new information that we've had.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that is an excellent place to start because we've already made some progress on that front, and I very much appreciate that. There isn't a lot that we can say publicly about it at this point, but I do want to say that we have already received one briefing from our staff on where we stand vis-a-vis IT security, and there is an effort underway to draft something that we could share with the public. Obviously, there are aspects of our IT security that we cannot, it would not be prudent for us to share with the public, but I do think that there is something that we can say on this, and we're working on it, and I very much appreciate that. As far as I know, everybody's pretty much on board, both with our assuring ourselves that we're in a good place vis-a-vis IT security, and also with our trying to find a way of framing the issue that we could share with the public.
And there's the rub, especially when it comes to security issues. So thank you very much, and that did prompt us to take a good look at where we are, and we learned from that request. There's another one that I would ask to maybe take a look at, and that's to just examine the Commission's enforcement function and see if you have any thoughts. If you want to start a conversation on that topic, number two.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to sort of frame this because there is some overall comments that will apply really with respect to all of this. I think this is a great opportunity for the Commission to take on an issue that is of great concern to the public. I thought it was great this morning. I appreciate those of you who have hung in here and have come back after lunch and are still here with us. We had a long meeting this morning, and we managed to resolve our differences on at least one matter that people came into the room. They weren't in the same place, but we worked hard on it, and we came to a unanimous conclusion that I think was a good result, and I think that's a great model, and I hope that we can continue working together. And I want to be very clear that these issues that I'm talking about are all, I want to discuss them in a prospective manner. I'm worried about the 2018 election. Nothing that would come of any of these proposals would affect anyone who did or didn't do anything in the 2016 election. We're talking about rulemakings. We're talking about other paths forward that would all be prospective. And my concern is that given everything that we have learned already and continue to learn, and I think this is not a partisan issue. Nikki Haley, the ambassador to the UN, said on July 8th, everybody knows that they're not just meddling in the United States election. They're doing this across multiple continents, and they're doing this in a way that they're trying to cause chaos within the countries. John McCain, also on July 9th, on Face the Nation, said that the Russian President Vladimir Putin got away with trying to change the result of the 2016, trying to change, I'm not saying he did change, the 2016 U.S. presidential election. He said, we know that Russia tried to change the outcome of our election last November, and they did not succeed, but there was really sophisticated attempts to do so. And in his words, so far they have not paid a single price for that. Now, we're not talking about prices.
Let me take a moment. This is precisely the concern I have about moving even quotes about people that in theory could be involved in our enforcement procedure. And I think if there was a way to avoid having to do that, we can still cover the same ground. I'm concerned about that. Counsel, I don't know what your thought is on that.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. I will bear that in mind. The point that I was trying to make is that this does not have to be and should not be a partisan issue, that there are Republicans as well as Democrats who are concerned about
And independence.
And no doubt Libertarians and Green Party members and all sorts of other folks who are concerned about what has happened and what may happen in the future. And I think it's really important for us to try to grapple with some of these issues, as I said, on a prospective basis, so that we don't find ourselves, we're only 16 months out from the next election. It is not that far away. Within a few months, things are going to be getting hot and heavy for the 2018 election. And I really don't want us to find ourselves 2 years from now looking back and saying, despite everything that we read in the newspaper, we decided to delay taking any proactive action, and then we find ourselves facing a new round of allegations coming out of the 2018 election. And that's what I would like us to work towards trying to avoid, towards taking whatever steps we can to try and address whatever issues are out there or that we can foresee, and to close any loopholes that we know about or that we can find out about. And I think that the key first step really is information gathering. This is certainly an issue in which the government should be all on the same page and all working towards the same goal. There are obviously any number of investigations going on, and there's no need for us to recreate the wheel. I would like to see us request briefings, both in public and, if need be, in private, about what other folks in government are learning, so that we can inform ourselves and be in the best position to assess whether there are steps that we could take to tighten our rules, to ward off future problems. And I think, you know, I would love to see our legal staff meet with some of the career prosecutors over at the Justice Department who are who work on putting together cases, again, on a prospective basis. I'm not talking about anything that I think we need to inform ourselves to the best of our abilities about what has already happened so that we can put ourselves in the best position to examine our prospective activity. So I'd like to see our lawyers talk to prosecutors and find out whether there are aspects of our rules that they think it would behoove us to change that would make their jobs easier going forward. Again, none of that would affect anybody who is already engaged in any conduct, because we are, the rulemakings are always prospective. So I would like to see us seek out that information, and if need be, if we need to get security clearances in order to receive that information, then I think we should seek that out. To the best of my knowledge, and I'm pretty sure about this, we currently have nobody on staff who has a security clearance. I think that would be an excellent thing to add to our enforcement toolbox.
But if you did, who would the person talk to?
What?
I said, if you did, who would the person talk to?
Which person?
Walk down the hall with a security clearance and can't talk to anybody.
I think we probably need to have more than one person. But, you know, we might want to have a small number of people in our Office of General Counsel get security clearances so that if there were to be matters that were presented to us that required that level of security in order to find out what happened, we would have people on board who could handle that. So I think that's that is a key element of our enforcement function that I'd like to see us pursue. And I think, you know, commissioners might need to get security clearances if we wanted to get the kind of briefings that I would hope that we could get. Although I think that there is also probably some public information that we could avail ourselves of. We could ask people from Treasury to better inform us about how, to their knowledge, foreign governments move money around, foreign nationals move money around. I'm well aware that in this country people have a nice organized banking system, and, you know, when this has come up when I've talked to people from other countries, that, you know, we're able to audit our political parties and our political committees because pretty much all of our financial transactions are done through banks, and they're done, you know, with credit cards or through electronic transfers, and these things are all traceable. That isn't the way every other country is organized. So I think, you know, it would probably benefit us to get more information about that. I would like to see us revisit some of the rulemaking proposals that I have previously suggested, and I'm not going to rehash all of them, but the one that I would most like to see us revisit, it's, you know, sort of the narrowest approach, and I'm happy to augment this with any other suggestions that anybody else has, but I think given the ingenuity that other countries may be employing and trying to influence our elections, I think it would behoove us to try and adopt some kind of a certification procedure where people who are spending money on the kind of political activity that requires disclosure to us would have to certify that they were not receiving their money, to the extent that they aren't already disclosing all of their donors. Some of the political activity that gets disclosed to us is not from people who disclose all their donors. I would like to see certifications that those entities are not getting their money from entities that are owned or controlled by foreign governments. You know, we can put aside for another day, because I understand they're very controversial, some of the corporate proposals that I've made that look at percentage of ownership and how many foreign nationals are on the board. I would love to address them, but if I get it, if people don't want to do that, but I would really love to know if, you know, based on all of the new information that we have learned in the last 7 months since I last brought up my rulemaking proposals, if there would be any interest at all in trying to do a rulemaking that would look into whether that kind of a certification could be adopted, because I just don't know why, regardless of whether an entity is incorporated in this country and potentially run or managed by a U.S. citizen, I think if it is owned or controlled by a foreign government, you know, put aside other foreign nationals, just foreign, let's just focus on foreign governments, because that is the thing that I think has most people most concerned right now. I would like to see whether maybe there's been any change of heart as to whether that might be a good idea to pursue through a rulemaking. And again, as we inform ourselves through all of these mechanisms, I think that we may find that there are things that we can't do through rulemakings that may require statutory change, and I look forward to working with my colleagues on potential legislative recommendations in that regard. And I also would encourage, I've heard from so many people in the public, and I so appreciate all of the emails and tweets and the other contacts that I've had from people who really would have been urging us to take some action in this regard. If there are people out there who have ideas about particular rulemakings or legislative recommendations or other steps that they would like to see the agency to take, I welcome those suggestions. Feel free to file your very own petition for rulemaking, but even if you have less developed ideas and just some thoughts, I really am so pleased to hear from so many people and continue to welcome that feedback. I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I know you wanted to do this issue by issue, but since there were sort of themes that ran through the entire topic, I thought it might be easier to just kind of talk about it more.
Go for it. I understand. Well, I think going back to that, unless you want to proceed differently, I think we should try and cover those 6 points, since at least we can say we did look at those and got feedback with a little more particularity. So let me just ask you, when you talk about revised corporate rulemaking, we're basically talking about certification at this point.
That's what I'm asking for at this point. As I said, I've put any number of suggestions out there, as have you, Mr. Chairman, over the years, on how we might better address the potential for foreign money to come in through the corporate structure. While I'm happy to consider any or all of them, I thought if I just kind of focused in on what I think is the narrowest proposal, and in light of, I guess it's a question for my colleagues. I know the last time I proposed it, there were not 4 votes for it, so I just, in light of everything that we have learned in the last 7 months, thought I'd just ask again if there's any increased interest in addressing that issue or anything similar to it.
Commissioner Goodman?
Vice Chair.
I took that as a
question, so let me answer a question with a question. The last time I proposed a certification mechanism for the commission, it couldn't garner 4 votes. So has there been a change of opinion on the certification mechanism that I proposed twice and that died by 3-3 votes twice?
What I would propose is that we put them both out as we frequently do in the rulemaking context, we could put out alternative proposals.
How would yours alter from mine?
My proposal is, and you know, it's not the document I have right at my fingertips right now, is that we would require a certification from political spenders that they did not get money from a company, any entity, regardless of whether it is incorporated in this country. It could be a domestic subsidiary. It could have a, you know, nominal leader who is an American citizen. But if that entity is owned or controlled by a foreign government, again, I'm focusing just on foreign governments at the moment, that we would require a certification from political spenders that they were not accepting money from those sources. And that is the difference.
The certification you're suggesting, by the way, I understood your prior proposals to be much broader than that.
I know. I'm trying to narrow it down.
Okay. So now I'm trying to understand, because I haven't seen a narrowed version in writing. And so, just so that I understand what we're at least discussing, is your proposal that anyone's making, for example, a regulated political expenditure or a contribution to a super PAC, at the time of making that expenditure or contribution would have to certify none of the funds that I am spending were received by a foreign national, received from a foreign national? Is that the certification? Because that sounds very close to ours.
That's the same thing.
No, it would go beyond that. It would, that too, but also that there, none of the funds were coming from any entity that is owned or controlled by a foreign government. Now, if you believe that is already covered, you know, maybe we could do this in an interpretive ruling. Maybe it doesn't require because I want the certification, and that would require an additional rulemaking.
And are you talking about wholly owned by a foreign government, or would any percentage of shareholder ownership, such as a Norwegian sovereign fund, be covered as well? If the sovereign fund of Norway owned 4% of an American public company, publicly traded company, what would the certification be in that case?
Owned or controlled. And, you know, we would...
Does partial ownership of 4% of a company's stock count?
Well, I think that's something that we would flesh out in a rulemaking, but that's not actually what I'm not pushing for that.
Okay, I'm trying to understand. You asked us a question. I'm trying to...
Well, when I get into the percentages, then people get nervous. You know, we could start with, you know, 100% wholly owned, and then we could consider, you know, 90%, 75%, 50%. I'm happy to consider any any alternatives. I'm willing to, as you know, in previous proposals, I've looked at percentages as low as 5%. I'm willing to, you know, stick with 50% and above. How about that? I'm trying to narrow it down to a place where I think we could make a little progress, and, you know, would not cover the world.
And how would you square that definition of what you're essentially doing? Would be interpreting foreign national, because the statutory prohibition we have is that a foreign national cannot make a contribution or expenditure in connection with an American election.
Correct.
For office.
Directly or indirectly, yes.
Right. Okay. So how, when you you are reinterpreting the scope of foreign nationals to prohibit, I take it your proposal would be to then prohibit any American company that has 50% ownership by a foreign government from making, from funding American electoral expenditures. Is that, that's what I
would like to put that out for.
And it could be 5%,
yep.
Could be 50%, could be 100%. You're flexible on where we draw that line. Okay.
That is the rulemaking process. It's a line drawing exercise.
Now let me ask you, how do you square that interpretation, that reinterpretation of foreign national to a percent ownership basis, with the definition of foreign principal in the Foreign Agents Registration Act?
It would address the definition of owned or controlled. You know, we would be defining what it means to own or control by a foreign government.
Yes, but what you're still doing, owned or controlled by a foreign national. The prohibition is as to foreign nationals, and we have a definition of what foreign national is. And nowhere in our law, our FICA interprets foreign national to be coextensive with the definition of foreign principal in the Foreign Agents Registration Act. The Foreign Agents Registration Act nowhere defines foreign principal according to the percentage ownership of the American corporation. And so I'm asking, because it could be a non-starter just as a legal principle, but it might form the basis of a legislative recommendation that perhaps Congress should reconsider the definition of foreign principal under the FARA. But I'm asking, how do I square a new... Now, by the way, we know Congress has the ability to define corporations and to restrict their activities according to percentage ownership, because Congress has done so in other statutes. Indeed, in the Foreign Agents Registration Act, Congress defined foreign agents to, in some cases, include press entities that have over 20% foreign ownership. So even in the Foreign Agents Registration Act itself, Congress knows how to draw percentage ownerships to draw distinctions between foreign agents and principals versus domestic companies. I can say that, you know, there's a sympathetic ring to what you say about 100% foreign owned. I'm not sure it's permitted by the statute. So I will agree here at the table publicly to investigate this issue with you further. I have looked at this previously, and I keep running into the definition of foreign principal in the Foreign Agents Registration Act. So in the meantime, 2 points. Three commissioners have voted for a certification mechanism within the grain of our current statute and definitions. And the body of law that has been created defining what a foreign national is and the conditions under which a U.S. company that may be publicly traded, under which it can spend money in American politics. And that proposal still stands as a mechanism to shore up the risk. Bob Linhard wrote about this not long ago at Covington and Burling. And he called this proposal a constructive proposal, given the risk that some people might be cheating the existing current laws. And so my offer to look at that still stands as well. And I extend that to the other side of the table. But more broadly, the circumstances raised in your memo, and that's how, for counsel's sake, I will try to refer to these, do not implicate the misuse of American companies to make unlawful contributions or expenditures in the form of contributions through American corporate entities, the funneling of money. We've seen that in numerous cases. And the Commission has a long history of enforcing the foreign national ban when foreign nationals tried to funnel money through corporate entities, including LLCs, into the United States. Certainly in the context before Citizens United, when corporations could give it the state and local level as well as the soft money accounts of the parties. So the Commission has a whole body of law and a track record of detecting and enforcing the misuse of corporate entities in the United States where foreign nationals tried to put money through them into American politics. There's a list of at least nearly a dozen cases, including the 1996 cases involving the Democratic National Committee. So we know we have a track record of enforcing that in the corporate. But what we are reading about in your memo today and what we're reading about in the press writ large is a very different form of participation in American politics. and I don't have to talk about any particular country, what your memo implicates and what we're reading about is criminal hacking of American computers. And our Department of Justice has been indicting foreign people on foreign soil for hacking into American computer systems in many cases for many years now. And there are laws against hacking. So I don't know how we get into the hacking of databases in the United States for political objectives and then dumping materials on popular websites that are foreign, hosted in foreign countries, but accessible by American citizens. I don't know how we get from that current issue, which is the subject of your memo, to just addressing the misuse of the corporate entity in the United States as the solution to the current issues raised in your memo and that we're reading about. So let me address more broadly that the issues raised in your memo are quite important. And I think everybody here acknowledges we don't need tweet storms to impress upon us the importance of the issues that are before us. And but we do have a law enforcement mechanism for addressing the issues that are raised in your memo. And it for those purposes, I do agree with you that we need to do more fact-finding before we undertake to respond to the issues raised in your memo as a policy matter, even prospectively. I think we need to do more fact-finding. And there are at least a dozen committees of both houses of Congress and other sister agencies of ours who are performing either investigations or fact findings into the issues raised in your memo right now. And I agree with you. We ought to have lines of communications open, particularly with our sister agencies. And so I take that as a highly constructive proposal. And I think, I don't speak for all my colleagues, I don't think there's any resistance to opening up lines of communication with other agencies. Where I think we may disagree is I believe this should be done through the ordinary mechanisms and procedures we have in our enforcement process. We have a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Justice. We have a track record of communications. This is exactly, if you look at the record of the 1996 DNC scandal involving Chinese money coming into the United States, there are many written communications and there were many meetings in the enforcement context, information sharing between the Department of Justice and this agency. So when these types of issues come up, I think the enforcement mechanisms we have in place are well-trod, tested, and they protect the information security. We're talking about clearances, for example. I think other agencies are far more likely to deal with this agency if we handle them in a prudent or prudential manner in our enforcement way, rather than suggesting that we're going to be holding public hearings and we want public briefings by them on the facts that they're finding out, or that, you know, we're here with an MSNBC news crew in tow. So I think we need to handle
this. News crew here? I must have missed that.
Well, or that we have Alt-FEC accounts that tweet this type of information out. So I think we can handle these issues approaches that you discuss in the context of our normal enforcement procedures and mechanisms. We are, you know, at bottom a law enforcement agency, and the issues raised in your memo fundamentally call upon us to respond in a very responsible and prudential way to them. And as for moving from that to prospective policymaking, I think we need to do more fact-finding, as you said. We don't need to recreate that wheel to do all of that ourselves, but we need to continue the information gathering. Now, I personally have been reading, I've read the intelligence report that's a public report that was requested by President Obama and issued in January, and I've read other reports issued by the Department of Homeland Security, and I've even read other documents and reports by the Center for Strategic International Studies. And so all of us, yes, should continue to inform what we do prospectively. But I think much of that, if you want it to be tailored to any demonstrated threats we currently face in the world, I think we ought to do significant fact-finding in our enforcement context to do that. I think we also need to acknowledge going into this the complexity of the issues we face in a modern technological world where American citizens and American journalists have at their fingertips to bring to bear their own opinions foreign material posted by foreign sources on websites, whether that be social media websites, whether that be WikiLeaks, because in a world of ubiquitous information where every American has access to foreign information, wherever it is posted, including foreign press accounts, getting at the issues raised in your memo are going to be far more complicated than just requiring certification of the use of American corporate resources. And if we're going to be responsive to the issues raised in your memorandum, I think the issues raised on how influence can be brought to bear on the public opinion of American citizens, hold aside hacking of voter databases or anything like that, which is outside our jurisdiction, these are going to be very complicated issues, and they are also going to implicate the First Amendment rights of American citizens to access that information. We just had a Supreme Court decision this month out of North Carolina where the Supreme Court said citizens have a First Amendment right not just to speak online but to access information online. And this was a 9-0 opinion with a very broad opinion written by five justices. So before we leap into this, I think we should mind, I understand the excitement that we're seeing in the press. I think we need to group as a law enforcement agency primarily and then find where there may be holes after all of that fact-finding is done. There are many historical examples of overreaction by government to foreign threats in American politics. And you mentioned I wouldn't want to end up 18 months from now saying we didn't do everything possible we could do. We would be remorseful if that happened. And by the same token, I don't want to overreact and 18 months from now or 5 years from now look back and say we overreacted, we acted prematurely without all of the facts, without considering all the constitutional implications for American citizens of what we did. For example, we rushed out and we undertook a rulemaking to diminish the First Amendment rights of American companies and their American shareholders or American labor unions and their American members because there might be some other foreign national shareholders or foreign national members of the labor unions. You know that this is highly precedented in American history. At times of concerns over national security, there's been an age-old debate of a conflict between American liberty versus American security. And you can look at the Alien Sedition Acts, 1797, where there was an overreaction to concern about, in a time of war with France, about the influence of the Jacobins in American political thinking. There was an overreaction in the 1950s, where there was concern about Soviet influence in American associations and politics, and an overreaction with the Smith Act and subpoenas by the McCarthy committees. And so I think we just need to act soberly, deliberatively, and we have enforcement mechanisms to do that. And so I just want to be sure that we have that calmer times, prevail in our thinking here. Now, as far as responding to specific proposals of what I think, we can do, first, as I mentioned, I think our best mechanism for doing our fact-finding on these issues will be our enforcement procedures. And that's they are well trod, and there are a lot of footprints on how to do that. You mentioned opening lines of communication. I agree, and I think we should have open lines of communication with sister agencies about these issues, especially where issues that may come before us overlap with issues that may come before other agencies.
Which ones are you thinking of when you say that?
Excuse me?
Which ones are you thinking of when you say that besides the DOJ?
Department of Justice is primarily the Treasury Department is possible.
Treasury, of course.
You mentioned FinCEN.
Mm-hmm.
This agency has mechanisms in place for communicating about common issues with the Department of Justice. We've done it with the IRS. So we have those mechanisms in place that preserve confidentiality of information while we proceed. I think also that this agency should offer up its expertise to our sister agencies.
Absolutely.
I mean, to the extent other agencies might address FECA issues, I think we ought to offer our general counsel's expertise to them to the extent that such advice is desired. You mentioned fact gathering and not recreating the wheel. That's on my list as well. It was on yours, so credit to you. But yes, we need to monitor. There are over a dozen other investigations going on, and some of those will render public reports about various issues, and they will have bearing and provide factual predicates for prospective legislative recommendations and rulemakings. So I think we ought to have a formal process here of collecting, monitoring, and collecting the reports and findings of other agencies, including congressional committees, and that those should be used to inform regulatory and legislative proposals. We've mentioned the FEC's IT security. It's not a secret. We've admitted it's been widely reported. Our agency's IT was hacked by a foreign source in 2013, and we have redoubled our efforts and spent money to improve and strengthen our IT security, and with those efforts are still underway. And Mr. Palmer, you've done great work in that, and I think you'll acknowledge the commission has given you the resources to do that. You mentioned making sure we have the resources in-house. I agree with you, and I think as we hire new attorneys, we may want to figure into the qualifications of new attorneys we hire gaps that we may have in knowledge of these issues, such as, you know, we might want to look for people who have worked in other fields. We have them, people who bring lots of, we have hired people from Department of Justice. We have hired people from congressional ethics offices, and those issues help us triage issues that come before us. And so I think that's a constructive suggestion that we should look at the set of skills we have in our Office of General Counsel and whether they cover knowledge in financial money, you know, those types of issues, cyber warfare and computer crimes. We ought to make sure we have those skill sets inside our agency. I think it also always behooves us as an agency to ensure, you mentioned security clearances here. I don't know. That's something I'll have to consider. I just don't know practically what we would do, and as this chairman mentioned, whether all commissioners would have to get those security clearances as head of the agency that's going to be receiving. We ought to investigate what it would entail. If we're going to do that, though, I think we do need to redouble our commitment here to ensure that we aren't leaking, that we are a trusted agency. And that we aren't leaking documents and other things. And so I think we need to redouble our efforts to make sure that we have those types of understandings and commitments in place here as an agency. So I think all of those are that you mentioned. I believe there is a unanimity in those. And just in looking at things that are not in your memo, in just contemplating the complexity of this issue, okay, I think we need to be mindful of the degree of intersection with foreign nationals in our daily lives and politics. So if you look at news reports just from this last election cycle, these matters, as far as I know, are not before us, and nor am I making any accusations. I raise them just to illuminate the complexity that we face. But here's a Hill article where then-candidate Clinton said that she was having conversations with foreign leaders about obtaining their endorsements in the presidential election and would marshal those to show that she would be a better leader than Donald Trump. There are news articles where former Mexican President Vicente Fox said he had a meeting with Speaker Pelosi to encourage Mexican Americans to vote for the Democrats and not Republicans. And then if you look at Vicente Fox's Twitter feed, we were discussing tweets and Twitters just today. He tweeted out hundreds of messages, including there may have been some republications, in favor of one party and against another from Mexico. And the list goes on. The French president endorsed one candidate, and it was published in a French publication that all Americans have access to. And so I think we have to consider all of the sensitivities that we face and the complexities of this issue as we undertake this issue. And again, Mr. Chairman, I believe that the enforcement mechanisms and procedures we have in place are the best path for us to take. Thank you.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commissioner Goodman. You've spoken at great length. I think you spoke longer than I did. So there's a lot to respond to there. It sounds to me like what you are proposing is, well, we just should go along and do what we've been doing, follow our, as you call them, our tried and true enforcement mechanisms, wait for public reports to be issued, and what I am suggesting is that I think under the current circumstances we need to up our game and not just follow the tried and true. Frankly, there's been a lot of resistance in recent years to our having much communication with the Department of Justice, and it's been you know, almost on a phone call by phone call basis. Each phone call is required four votes to authorize. If that's what you're contemplating, that is not what I am contemplating. I'm happy that you're willing to consider getting security clearances. I think that commissioners probably would need to get security clearances, and for the kind of briefings that I would suggest that we request, you know, I think yes, commissioners would need to get security clearances. I don't think that's an insurmountable obstacle, and I would suggest, you know, that we get a small number of staff people also. It's a few thousand dollars apiece. It's not in it might take a few months, but I don't think, you know, there are apparently a bunch of lawyers in town who have security clearances based on the clients they represent. I don't think it's an insurmountable obstacle, and I think it would allow us to receive information that we otherwise would not be able to receive. And I think we ought to make affirmative outreach to, you know, if there are 12 ongoing investigations, then to all 12 of those investigatory bodies and see what they are willing to share with us. And I completely agree with you that we also should be as willing to share both any information that we have as well as our expertise here, which, you know, because there are money and politics issues that are being written about. You know, generally speaking, pretty much everything takes money to accomplish. So there may well be spending issues that haven't even shown up in the newspapers yet, that if we started to dig in and try and get some more information, we would find out about. I also think that one of the alarming aspects of the just, you know, sort of what's come out so far is the ingenuity that's been and the aggressiveness that appears to have been deployed. And I think to say we should only focus on the things that have been identified in previously published reports and assume that no new tricks are going to be played, I think that's a mistake. I think to the extent that there are current loopholes that we either know about now or that we could identify through which foreign money could flow, then it would behoove us to try and address that, ideally before something lands in front of us in the enforcement context. I think we just need to make sure that we are closing off the spigots. I think I appreciate that your willingness to engage with me on the policy matters, on the prospective rulemaking matters. I don't think we need to resolve every aspect of that before we start a rulemaking and put it out for public comment. And I think that if we were to do that, we would get a lot of good feedback from a lot of smart lawyers and smart non-lawyers outside the building that would really enhance the product. And we should not predetermine that, you know, there's only one potential path forward and we're only willing to put out one set of options for public comment. I think that would be a mistake. So I guess
that's a question. If you haven't mind getting security clearances, it seems to me we need to take a look at exactly what we want to do with that. And how we're going to go about using any information or even successfully getting it, because any agency that I can think of that would have serious security issues before them is going to be very careful about how they give it to the Federal Election Commission, because they have no knowledge as to how well, we can, if somebody may have a security clearance here, how well our system is to protect that information. And they're going to want to know very carefully what we intend to do with it and why we want to get it. And so we'd have to ask them, I think, this is what we think we want to know more about. When you get down to the nitty-gritty of it, I don't think we can walk in and say we want to learn more, we want to get some security clearances and pick your brains. And so I think that's a problematic situation. So I'm wondering how are you perceiving that we might successfully get information that we don't need when 90% of the information that I think there's areas where we really could learn a lot, and that is how money is moved. That's kind of my thinking right now, because there's so many different ways, and I've learned quite a bit about how bitcoins work, and it's incredible the way money can move, and people would not even know it. It's things of value. We it's not just money in the traditional sense. So those are things that I think might sharpen our rulemaking. But I'm not too sure where you want to go with that. I think we should do baby steps. Remember the movie? Baby steps. You know.
If baby steps are the only steps we can agree on, then I'm willing to take baby steps.
I think we need to take it, you know, kind of focus ourselves and see where we want to go, and then I'll get an understanding that this is what we're going to try and accomplish. Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just can't help but think about the last matter that we had on the agenda, the volunteer mail exemption. We've been talking about it for 7 years. We're auditing six committees that have no idea what the legal standard is. Our own auditors and our own lawyers don't know what the legal standard is. And now we want to come along, get security clearances, and participate in investigations that we have absolutely no expertise in whatsoever. We know right now there are many other federal agencies and congressional committees investigating or doing fact-finding on the issues regarding foreign participation. The special counsel, the Department of Justice, the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee, U.S. House of Representatives Intelligence Committee, and at least six other congressional committees are looking into various aspects of the 2016 election. So that's a lot of different entities. They're all part of the federal government, and we're now proposing that we get security clearance and go over to the FBI and ask them to let us know about confidential security issues that are going on in investigations with foreign nationals. And it's just stunning to me that that's something that people are actually considering doing. I think we should mind our own house. I think we should do the things that we're more expertise in. I agree that obviously if a complaint is filed, we have a specific statute in FICA called enforcement, and we should follow the statute and handle all enforcement matters within that context. And as you know, those matters have to be held confidential. Then, as far as all the other agencies that I just read, yes, we should wait until they've issued reports. We should learn from those reports. If they've found something that implicates our laws and our rules, then absolutely, we should open a rulemaking. And if it's necessary to curb some kind of in foreign involvement that we have jurisdiction over, yes, we should do a rulemaking then. But again, the notion that we would be duplicative, just now get security clearance and try to somehow wedge our way into ongoing investigations is really just, it's really hard to believe. I think that, as I said, we don't have the expertise to do this. And many other entities are already engaged in this, and they have been. These investigations have been going on for months and months. Newspaper reports just came out recently that President Obama knew about the foreign meddling as far back as August of last year. So now here we come almost a year later and say, we just got a security clearance, let us into your briefings. Again, we should do this professionally and responsibly and follow our statute, do this in the confidential enforcement process. Of course, if any other entity seeks our expertise on the finer points of FICA, of course we should provide that expertise. That I fully agree with. And we should offer any information that we get in our enforcement process to relevant departments. I think probably we're all talking about the Department of Justice, and we've done that before. But anything beyond that just seems to be duplicative and really not part of why we are here.
Well, and that, Max, I agree. I think if we're doing baby steps, certainly whatever entity we're talking about, I think we would start with Department of Justice because we have a memorandum of understanding. We've had it for a long time. I think people forget, and in case people here don't know, we don't do anything in terms of enforcing law from a criminal perspective. It's all civil. It means that we can only fine. Nobody goes to jail based upon what we do. We operate on preponderance of the evidence. They operate on beyond a reasonable doubt. Everything is different here in that regard. So they have definite needs to have security that we don't generally have to have. And other than keep our processes confidential, which I think we do a pretty good job of, but I think we could maybe sharpen that up in some respects too. And maybe before we could talk to anybody about getting a security clearance, we ought to make sure that we can guarantee that we have that here. And I don't think we could probably qualify to do that right now. So I think if we want to do something along that line, that would be the natural place to start, and I think it would have to be a finite inquiry and see, for example, if we refer a matter over to the Department of Justice, they may like to know that we've been through some process on an elementary scale to see if it's a case they even want to take. If we had more sophistication about that, that might help. Those kind of things. But I think if we start getting on the telephone and calling up these other agencies and tell them we'd like to come on over and we want to get a security clearance so we can talk to you about your cases, I think it's going to be a hard sell. Thank you for the Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure if people are misinterpreting me on purpose or I'm not being clear. Perhaps I'm not being clear. I'm trying to avoid duplication. I think we should reach out to other agencies that are involved in investigations. I don't know about you, but I've been reading about a lot of campaign finance issues. And I'm trying very hard to avoid talking about any individual. You know, my colleagues are, you know, full of names and examples. All of them oddly seem to be Democrats, but okay. Those are all the examples that you can think of. I suggest that we reach out to the other entities in government that are conducting investigations and ask them whether there are campaign finance issues that are part of what they're looking into, offer to be helpful, offer our expertise, and ask whether there is anything that we should know about. They may have information, you know, and they've got, you know, dealing with us may not be their number one priority. They're involved in very sensitive investigations and trying to get to the bottom of things, and that's appropriate. Maybe it has not occurred to them that, you know, maybe we have other folks in government that either should be in the loop or might have some expertise to share. So I would start there with just reaching out and saying, are there any campaign finance issues that you are looking at that you would like to either share information with us about or take advantage of our expertise in this area because we know a thing or two about that? I think that would be a constructive step. I would like to ask our staff to, I would like to invite our enforcement staff to make suggestions to us, to tell us what fields of expertise they think they could benefit from adding to their portfolio, and I would specifically like to ask them to report to us and make a recommendation as to whether they think it would be beneficial to have at least a couple of lawyers on staff who have security clearances. And, you know, I think it would have to be, you know, based on the way we're organized, you know, we probably need to have one or two in order to make it practical and useful, you know, and I defer to our counsel on that, one or two staff attorneys, a team leader, and, you know, probably the head of enforcement and the acting general counsel, because people are going to need to, you know, as the chairman said, you need somebody else to talk to. There's no point in having one person in the building who has a security clearance.
But wouldn't that include the commissioners at that point? I mean, if we have to make any judgments, we would have to have the information that was, I'm just talking about where the proliferation would eventually go.
I think, you know, it doesn't offend me that, you know, commissioners and a handful of staff will all get security clearances. I don't personally see that as problematic, but I would ask that the staff make a recommendation to us as to if would it be useful, and if so, you know, which staff or commissioners do they envision? Because obviously we're not going to get it for the entire Office of General Counsel or the entire agency. Who do they think it would be useful to have that level of security clearance, and, you know, and there are different levels of security clearance, and what other skill sets would they find beneficial going forward? And I guess we're going to have to work across the aisle and see if there is any kind of a rulemaking proposal that we could even put out for comment. I would hope that there would be, but in the nature of how we do rulemakings, we tend to put out more than one option. So, you know, if the offer is put out our option or nothing and only our option, that's probably not a terribly constructive path forward.
But would you reject it? I mean, if we're talking baby steps, I mean, that was my suggestion, but every time we add another layer of activity, it invites more disagreement where a smaller area of activity might win the day, and then it could go from there. And I know you look, give me that skeptical eye, but
well, it just,
I'm raising the point. That
we have two proposals on the volunteer materials exemption, Mr. Chairman. We tend to have two proposals on everything. If you're saying, you know, why don't we just go ahead with what the Republicans want to do and not have a Democratic alternative or not have any alternative, then
I don't think anybody's saying that.
That's a little bit hard for me to swallow.
There may be different points of view, but I don't think it's has to be partisan on things like this.
It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be partisan. You know, but that's what I'm trying to explore, you know, on this rulemaking idea. What I heard offered before was, you know, would you be interested in the proposal that the three Republican commissioners put forward before? And my response to that is I would be happy to put that forward as a out for comment along with other alternatives, or at least one other alternative.
Madam Vice Chair.
Commissioner Weintraub, going back to something that you said, I tried to write it down, but I think you said ask the other agencies if there are campaign finance issues that they are looking at and that they would like to ask us about. And I think that there was something else that I missed. So it's a
two-way street, ideally, I would think. What I would like to ask other entities that are investigating this issue is, are you looking at any campaign finance issues?
Okay.
Are there issues where we might be helpful to you, where we could share our expertise? And are you encountering things in the information in the that affect campaign finance, that affect money in politics, that affect how money is moving, that you believe we should know about?
Let me just suggest this. First of all, and I think the point is well said, we are basically an enforcement agency and a disclosure agency. That's what we do. We're not in a position to, move into voter law and those kinds of things. That's not what we do. We enforce the laws that we have on campaign finance. So we're talking money. And if you look at where we might go in the next few months, you'd be looking at the House, the Senate, the Special Counsel, the Department of Justice. All of those would be the natural ones to go to, but yet do you really think that given the nature of the situation that we could either add anything to their benefit or get much from them with the type of security that would be required, that, I mean, realistically would do us move the ball ahead for us in those areas? So if you say yes, I'd be surprised, but if you say no, then we'd have to go somewhere else. And so, to me, that's all, you know, sounds good, but I don't think as a practical matter we're going to have anybody over there in the House Intelligence Committee or the Senate or the Special Counsel or the Department of Justice wanting to really open up their dossiers and tell us about the issues they've confronted and here's how you can avoid this in the past when everything is on the move right now. I think if we were going to do any rulemaking that touches on some of these things, I'd be inclined to let a little time pass because every month and every week we learn a lot more about how things have been moving in the system and with other countries, and those certainly can be educational just from watching what's happening. Just do some thoughts. I'm not trying to put cold water on it, but I think realistically we have to take a look at what we can get done. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually think we totally should reach out to all of those entities and ask, and we will not know the answer to that question until we ask the question, because what I am reading in the newspaper suggests to me that there are campaign finance issues at issue that other entities are looking at. And I think we should affirmatively, and let me just finish the thought, because I'll forget it. I think that we have expertise to offer. I think that it may well be that informing us is not their number one priority, but if we ask, they may well say, you know, there are things that you should know about. And I want to stress that we have other functions besides enforcement and disclosure. We are the sole rulemaking body in campaign finance. We are the only entity that, under the law, can write any regulations affecting campaign finance or money in politics. So if there are issues that need to be addressed through rulemakings, we're the only ones who can do that.
Okay, I understand that, and I'm not saying that it wouldn't work. It just seems to me to be a hard sell, considering the
I take it I've got a hard sell here, Mr. Chairman.
I understand what you say, and I think we need to sharpen our tools in terms of how to deal with issues in terms of money moving in various directions, but I'm just not sure they're going to be feel confident that they can say, sure, this is how it works, and given the fact that there's some pretty tough issues they're confronted with, and I don't think they'd want to make any mistakes unless they knew us really well and
they
knew exactly what we could do.
We won't know unless we
just saying. Anybody?
Go ahead.
Madam Vice Chair?
So you're saying that because you've seen in the news that people might be looking at FICA, we should call up Bob Mueller and say, are you looking at FICA? Can we help you? And do you think you should let us know about it? And I think the odds of their sharing any information with us are not small, they're zero. And why I know that is because we've been interacting with the Department of Justice for years. Since I've been here, I can barely think of any information that they've given us on much more mundane matters than this. Much more mundane. They do not share information with us, and we all know it. And when you can look at all the close enforcement matters, you can see the lapse of time that we've waited in many cases to receive information from the Department of Justice that never comes on very mundane issues. So that's one. So I think it's a certainty that they're not going to share information. And I have no interest in calling up Bob Mueller and asking him if he needs my help or if I should know about his investigation. I am not interested in asking him to let me know about his investigation. Also, there have been other times where we've read in the newspaper that the Department of Justice is looking into campaign finance violations. There was a couple of years ago, the hot button issue was coordination. And I remember being at several public conferences where the Department of Justice would say, we've got some new theories on coordination and we're going to enforce this law. And I don't recall anybody proposing calling them up in the middle of their investigation and saying, can we be helpful to you? And is there anything you want to tell us about your ongoing investigation? So there's no precedent for this. We have, since I've been here, we've never called up and done this type of thing. I also remember when John Edwards was, sorry, he's a Democrat, I just can't think of a Republican, right? If you think of one, let me know. But when John Edwards was being prosecuted for campaign finance violations, I remember thinking that the theory of the case that the Department of Justice was using was one that I didn't agree with. I thought they were misinterpreting campaign finance law, and I did want to call them and say, hey, you might want our expertise on this, but I didn't think it was my place to do so. I figured if they knew our phone number, and they're right across the street, and if they wanted to call me and get my read on FICA, they could have done it, and I would have been happy to give it to them, because I think he was wrongly prosecuted on a FICA violation that really shouldn't have been. So there's been numerous examples of this very kind of thing where we read in the paper about allegations and nobody has thought to get a security clearance or to ask for briefings or to find out if there's things that we should know about in those pending investigations, and I don't think we should start here.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I'll just comment that I think we should, in many instances, pay a lot more attention to what we read in the newspaper. There are times when I think we should start investigations at our own behest based on what we read in the newspapers.
And there's a process for that. And if you get four votes, you can start your own investigation based on a newspaper report. You got to get four votes, though.
Yeah, well, there are three votes who don't believe that we should ever do anything based on a newspaper report, so I don't think that's really going to lead us anywhere.
Well, I think we have to be realistic about that, and I think let me just ask you, suppose you want to investigate something and you find some wrongdoing, now what are you going to do? What will you do? We investigate, there's no respondent in sight, but we have somebody we're thinking about or an area And we ran across three or four, five people who were involved in what we perceived to be really bad stuff in terms of campaign finance. Now what do we do? Certainly, we already made up our mind. I mean, are we going to go now and be the judge and the jury? How are we going to bring somebody to justice? Are we going to issue subpoenas? Would we then go over and give our, you know, reports to the DOJ and see what they want to do? And they, I mean, how much money would we want to spend on doing something like that? And with who on staff? So I think those kind of things would have to be thought out before we embark on something like that. So I want to hear what you have to say about if you wanted to move forward with an investigation without any defendant or pending case, what would your thinking be?
I don't even know. I'm not even sure what you're asking, Mr. Chairman, because I have not suggested that we engage in some free-form investigation with nobody in mind to investigate. I agree with you. I don't know how we would do that.
Well, suppose you did have somebody in mind and there wasn't any case pending before us. You say, "Well, I think that's a lot, you know, that's a violation." But what would you propose we do?
Well, there is, as Commissioner Hunter pointed out, there actually is a process in our directives for us to launch an investigation. And the fact that we, just like any other case, the fact that we launch an investigation doesn't mean that we have predetermined the outcome of that investigation. It just means there's something worth investigating. I guess I'm not seeing how anything I suggested would move us into...
You and I are the longest-serving people on the commission.
We are.
And you're just a little ahead of me. But we've never, to my knowledge, thought that that was something that we would either consider seriously or spend money for or budget for, that kind of thing. What's your thinking on that?
I disagree with you, Mr. Chairman. It has not happened.
I'm aware. I can take it.
I know you can. There is a process for us to launch an investigation if information comes to us. It certainly, you know, if another government agency were to provide us with information that caused us to think, wow, we should be looking into this aspect that maybe is not their primary focus, but they have come across some information that they decide to share with us. And the Justice Department has, you know, and other agencies have from time to time sent us information and said, you might want to look at this. So that's not unprecedented. We have a procedure for launching an investigation on our own behest. It hasn't been used very much because usually if it's in the newspaper, somebody files a complaint. You know, there have been times when I have seriously considered whether I wanted to deploy that, I think it's Directive 6, try and start our own investigation. But usually I find if I just, you know, wait a little bit longer, somebody else is reading the same newspaper articles that I am, and they file the complaint, and, you know, we deal with it through the normal complaint process. But I guess I'm not really clear on what I have said so far that would make you think that I am interested in launching some free-form investigation. Presumably, if we were to reach out to another government agency and say, is there anything we should know about that you have information on, and they said, well, actually, yes, we'd like to tell you about such and such, then we would have information. There would be, you know, it wouldn't be like we're just sort of roaming the streets looking for someone to investigate. We would have direction based on the information that was in front of us. I'm not really sure where all this is coming from.
Well, we have gotten in the past letters that suggest that we should they try and point out some wrongdoing and suggest that we conduct investigations. And I can think of some over the years. And we've never lifted a finger to do that. We've always waited, and I think rightfully so, in the sense that, first of all, we're not structured for that, but secondly, sooner or later, they seem to be at our doorstep anyhow, through some complaint that's filed. But if you can think of anything right now other than in the world that's before us in terms of things that are already under investigation, you know, we could talk about it, but I don't see where that might be. And I'm skeptical that whether that is the best step for us to advance our skills. And I'm not convinced that we're leaving people free from potential law enforcement to any real degree because we haven't embarked on that. And I would welcome at our next meeting for some detail on how you would perceive we should structure our organization to go about something like that, because we have to figure out who's going to what legal areas we think might be violated, how much money it would take to investigate, what information could we get without a subpoena, what investigators that we have that would do this when we also have a lot of good serious pending cases before us. So, I mean, I think those are the technical issues that I would foresee would be we'd be confronted with if we were to take on an investigation like that.
I don't know what this investigation is that you think I'm proposing we take
on. Well, I don't either.
I'm not
pointing out that we have the power to go ahead and do that, and so I'm just raising issues about what if we were to do that, how would you propose we, practically do that?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how to answer that because I'm not making that proposal. What I am suggesting is that we ask our staff to give us a recommendation about the skill set that any skill sets that are missing in-house that we would like to we think would benefit us to have. I am suggesting that we reach out to the other agencies that are investigating issues of foreign influence, offer our expertise, and ask them whether whether there's anything that we can do to help them, offer them any information that we may happen to have, and ask them if there's anything that in the field of campaign finance that they think that we ought to know about. I am going to continue to try and work with my colleague and see if there is any kind of regulatory proposal, because I think that there are current loopholes in the law that could allow, whether it is the thing that is in the newspaper today or not, I think there are people out there who are from foreign places that are trying to influence our elections, and if they have not found these loopholes yet, they will. And we really don't know, because there have been hundreds of millions of dollars in dark money that have been spent on our elections, and by the very nature of it being dark, we don't know where it comes from. And that's why my proposal about certifications would not get at what I would like to get at, which is to clear up where the dark money is actually coming from, but would merely find out where it's not coming from and make sure it's not coming from impermissible sources. And we would flesh out what that means. I think that you, Mr. Chairman, have suggested to me that we could invite somebody from Treasury over here to further educate us on how some of these foreign money transactions are conducted, and I think that was a constructive suggestion that I wholeheartedly endorse. I think it would be a great idea. Informing ourselves is the first step, but I don't want to wait until there is a public report out there 2 years from now. I think we should see if there is information that's available to us now.
Yeah. Well, I think things are more sophisticated now in the way money and things of value are moving, and how things of value are being increasingly looked at as something akin to a basis to enforce the law criminally. So I think we could sharpen our skills on that, and maybe the Office of General Counsel could give some thought to that. And I'm sure they would as soon as they hear what I have to say. No, Mr. Baker, the question was whether or not it might pay for the Office of General Counsel to take a look at some skills that we might want to sharpen up on. I'd say use the keyword sharpen because we run across most of them anyhow. But for my interest, I'm interested to know how some of the the money is being moved and things of value, and how those should be kept in mind if we were to engage in some regulatory work. Something like
sure,
that.
Sure, we could do that. Although
we're not asking for a security clearance. Right. Not a security clearance.
But I think I need to state, since we are in a public session, there are no skill gaps in the General Counsel.
There we go.
Thank you.
You have that,
but
Mr.
perhaps
Doyle?
There are things that could make you even better.
We always strive to be better.
Very well said.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Goodman.
Yeah, I don't want to leave on a note of disharmony, because I think there was some agreement here today.
And
we should emphasize all about where we disagree when there is agreement that the issues raised in your memo are important. All of us are Americans first here, and so they're very important issues raised. You mentioned the skill sets for in-house. I think there's agreement on that. You mentioned starting some type of communication. I think where we might disagree is the understanding of how we might communicate with other agencies. I have my own notion of how it would be done, and it would be done through the normal procedures and processes of our under the umbrella of our enforcement process. Now, you may have some other notion of how we're going to communicate with other agencies. I think the how-to can be resolved, but given that I take it that the issues to be communicated and shared and the expertise to be provided might be specific to individual cases. This is not just in the air. It would have to be done in an enforcement context using enforcement procedures. And then you mentioned rulemaking and looking for loopholes. Okay. You mentioned what your proposal would accomplish, and that is to at least ensure that the money isn't coming from prohibited sources. I think that our proposal does the same thing, because it requires someone, when making the expenditure or the contribution, to certify compliance with existing law that prohibits money to come from a foreign source to make it. The difference in our policy versus your policy is ours, the one that we have proposed twice and has been voted down twice, our certification proposal would call for or provide a certification mechanism for compliance with existing law, that only Americans make corporate political spending decisions and only American funds are spent. And we think that law is consistent with the definition of foreign principle in the Foreign Agents Registration Act. Your rulemaking proposal, and we think that could be done. That type of that would be a compliance mechanism that doesn't require rulemaking. Your proposal is a rulemaking that changes the law, that changes the definition of foreign national to go to some type of percentage base of ownership that I do not see in the organic statutes. So that is something I'm happy to continue to discuss it with you, but that may be an impasse, and we need to recognize and get that elephant in the room up on the table, that we may you may be looking at what in the end result is a legislative recommendation and not just a jump out into a rulemaking. And finally, you said if there are issues that need to be addressed, we should act on them in a policymaking mode. And again, I say, let's gather the facts. I think we're in agreement on that. This is what you said. Let's gather all the facts. Let's act thoughtfully, deliberatively. And my position is just the caveat that we not overreact. There is a frenzy going on in the news articles, in the news cycles these days. And I think that whatever policy proposals we make, whether they're rulemakings, whether they are policies, whether they are legislative recommendations, need to be informed by specific facts and findings. And based on what I read in the press, they are far more complicated given the ubiquitous information on the World Wide Web. And so before we charge out prematurely with policy proposals or overreact with policy proposals that aren't tailored to actual loopholes, I think it would behoove us to act cautiously. And that is informed by history. So I want to read Justice Hugo Black dissenting in Dennis v. United States 1951 decision, one of the communist cases, which tested the Smith Act. You know, I went to see the Scalia show at Arena Stage last night, who, of course, is quite a hero on the bench. But when it comes to First Amendment jurisprudence, there is no purer justice in the history of the Supreme Court than Justice Hugo Black, who said, no law means no law. And so he was a great defender of those socialists and people who found themselves out of vogue in a time of fear and hysteria, fear of foreign influence in our politics. And so in his dissenting opinion in Dennis v. United States, he said, there is hope, however, that in calmer times, when present pressures, passions, and fears subside, this or some later court will restore the First Amendment liberties to the high preferred place where they belong in a free society. Mr. Chairman, I think that's the point you just made. We need to let some time pass and gather more information to act deliberatively before we rush out on this field too quickly in reaction to the news reports that we're reading. Former Justice Brennan, who was part of that Warren Court block, also throughout the 13-year period of the communist cases coming to the court. He later gave a speech looking back historically on that era in our history, and he said, after each perceived security crisis ended, the United States has remorsefully realized that the abrogation of civil liberties was unnecessary, but it has proven unable to prevent itself from repeating the era when the next crisis came along. And he said that in 1987, a lecture at the Law School of Hebrew University in Jerusalem. This is a common notion that in times of crisis, we tend to overreact. And I'm throwing some caution to the wind that we act deliberately and professionally in response to the issues raised in your memorandum. And I think there is a lot of agreement on the proposals you've made, and we shouldn't let some points of disagreement get in the way of that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Justice Brennan was probably talking about, you know, McCarthyism and the Red Scare and people losing their jobs, and, you know, we're just, it's not what we're talking about here. But I do think that this is a situation in which people are justifiably concerned about what is happening, what has happened, and what could happen. And I'm glad to hear the areas of agreement, but I'm a little bit frustrated because it sounds like, you know, there's a general consensus that, you know, we just, you know, shouldn't do anything too quickly. We should sit back and wait for other things to happen. And, you know, maybe in a couple of years we'll be in a position to assess what may or may not have happened. And I think the situation's a little bit more urgent than that. That's just my own personal view. I would like to get some clarification, though, because I've heard a couple of different approaches, so I'm really not sure whether there is agreement on this point or not. I mean, we've talked about different... It sounds like we would have to talk further about the mechanisms that we would use to seek the information, but I can't tell whether we do or do not have agreement that we should reach out to the other government entities that are conducting investigations in this area to see whether, again, I'm not looking to, you know, say, hey, just we're really curious and we'd like to know what you're looking at in, you know, the area of hacking, which we don't have a lot of expertise in. What I would propose that we ask is, do you have campaign finance issues that you're looking at? Can we be of use to you in that area? And is there any information in that area that you think we should know about? And what I have not been able to discern is whether there is or is not agreement to do that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Goodman.
perhaps the reason that there is some vagary in that is because I think we're getting into the area of executive privilege on existing matters and the mechanisms we may use to address existing complaints.
I'm sorry. You didn't mean executive privileges in the executive branch.
I'm sorry. I meant our law enforcement confidentiality and privileges. Your point taken. And that's why I have been speaking around the issue that there are general mechanisms in place in the law enforcement context, and that's as specific as I want to be in this public meeting. Thank you.
Can we take it up in a closed session then?
I expect we will at some point.
My suggestion would be if we embark on that we consider, rather than a big plenary approach to a number of different agencies, we are tied correctly with the Department of Justice. And I think we should, if anything, begin with a conversation there. And they may say, you know, they could really use you over the Securities and Exchange Commission, or they could really use you over the, you know, they may have some ideas themselves. Certainly, I think they got kind of a black eye with Edwards, and they realize that I'm guessing that if they'd talked and I thought it was on both parties, thought that their interpretation of the law wasn't likely to carry the day, that might be a good place to start. Hearing nothing. Does that mean that we've exhausted our expertise? Alec, what do you think on some of these issues in terms of, we're talking IT, and could we benefit by, calling other agencies and getting their IT expertise? I mean, I think given the money that we've spent and the people that we've hired and stuff, I think you might have some ideas on whether or not that's a useful step.
Mr. Chairman, at this point. I was hoping you're going to ask me if there's any additional matters.
Yeah, I know you were. I can see that. we'll make it quick.
Yeah, let me give that some thought. I think that's a very thought-provoking question, something that deserves some serious consideration. Allow me to think about that.
Sure, of course. Thanks. We'll do that. Any further comment? Anything from the Office of General Counsel? Commissioner Weintraub, this is your baby.
Well, it does seem to be my baby. It's not clear that anybody's interested in sharing custody on this.
Well, from my perspective, I think this was a very positive thing, and I don't think you can expect any of us, miracles on the beginning of some of these conversations, but I do think it's been good.
Well, I'm really glad we were able to resolve the sergeant-at-arms question earlier today. I'm glad about that.
Well, with that, you get the magic question. Are there any matters no longer entitled to exemption?
Mr. Chairman, there are no such matters.
Chairman, just to clarify, that's not the question this matter. This management administrative matters.
How about that one?
Same answer.
Okay. Meeting's adjourned.